Hello, this is Don reading for you on Monday, March 20, and I'm going to be reading the Bloomington Pantograph. And we're going to start with the front page and read today's news in the Pantograph. The first article has a headline of "Normal to Consider Employee Raises." About 250 Town of Normal employees are in line to get small raises next month. Effective April 1, 249 classified employees, not including police and fire employees and city manager Mark Peterson, who works under separate contracts, will receive a 0.2% cost of living adjustment to their salaries, pending normal city council approval. The town would pay about $55,000 for the raises, said Finance Director Andrew Hun. The town gives raises to those employees based on the Consumer Price Index for urban consumers, released twice each year by the federal government, Peterson said. The last four CPI changes were 0% in April 2015, 1.63% that October, 0% in 2016, and 1.9% last October, according to a memo from Hahn to the council. Members of the Normal firefighters and police unions get 2.75% and 2.85% annual raises, respectively, every April 1 through 2019 under collective bargaining agreements that took effect April 1, 2016. The council approved a 3.5% annual raise for Peterson last October. The council, which will meet at 7 p.m. Monday on the fourth floor of Uptown Station, also is expected to take up an amendment to the public comment policy for the council and other town boards and commissions. Under the changes, speakers would be able to address the council at as many meetings as they wish, rather than once every 45 days. They could speak for 3 minutes per appearance rather than two, and speak for 6 minutes rather than five if they represent an organization with prior notice. The changes also would expand the time for comments at each meeting from 10 minutes to 20 and create a lottery for speakers if more sign up than will fit in the time allowed, according to a memo from Corporation Counsel Brian Day. Currently, the mayor decides what order speakers will appear. The proposal was developed at the same time as the Illinois Attorney General's office reviewed the legality of the council's current policy. Deputy Public Access Counselor Neil Olson wrote Thursday that the 45-day rule violates the Open Meetings Act and the policy should be changed. Olson also suggested to the town allow speakers to talk about whatever they want rather than agenda items only. Speak without notifying officials 2 hours before a meeting, and speak without giving a home address. Mayor Chris Coos said the first two rules will be kept in place. In other business, the council will consider the following: a $948,000 project with George Gildner, Inc. to replace water mains near Ironwood subdivisions and the 300 block of Hovey Avenue. Work will take place will take about 4 months, according to a memo from interim water director Greg Trommel. In other action, a one-year $53,000 agreement with Cardinal Infrastructure LLC for federal lobbying services. The company replaces GHG and Associates, with which the town had a similar agreement before its president started Cardinal, Peterson said. That agreement has since expired. That concludes the news from the Normal Town Council. And then we find sports news on the front page. Good news. School and fans celebrate Bloomington High School's third place finish. There's a big color photo on the front page with Bloomington High School senior Justin Newsom holding a trophy, and he's celebrating with his teammates who surround him during Sunday's ceremony at the high school. The Purple Raiders placed third in the state, the first time in 42 years BHS advanced to the state tournament. So that's a great thing for the Bloomington High School fans. The Raiders athletic director, on ending with a win, said, "What this team did was special." in an attempt to put Bloomington High School's third-place finish in the boys' 3A state championship into perspective, Bloomington High School athletic director Tony Bauman did some research. Here's his quote. The last time the season ended with a win for Bloomington High School basketball was 1916. Bauman said Sunday during a celebration for the team in the Bloomington High School gymnasium. So what this team did was special. Friday's appearance in the semifinals against Oak Park Fenwick at Carver Arena in Peoria marked the first time in 42 years the Purple Raiders had advanced to the state finals. The Friars ended the dreams of a state championship, dealing Bloomington High School a 67-52 loss. The Purple Raiders rebounded Saturday with a 72-56 win over Springfield to take third place in the tournament. Morgan State won the state championship Friday, beating Fenwick 69-67. Bauman, the athletic director, said there were 176 teams that started the Class 3A tournament, and only two of those teams won their final game of the year. This team has absolutely nothing to hang their heads about. BHS ended the season with a record of 27-5. That's the most wins in a school history, he said. About 200 people helped celebrate the wins Sunday afternoon, which started with an escort from the Bloomington Police and Fire Departments. I'm very proud of these guys, very proud, said Bloomington High School Principal Tim Moore. There were four seniors on this team, and you can't do something like this without great leadership. These guys had a tremendous impact on this year. Jeremiah Beasley, Dazen Farias, Javon McGill, and Justice Newsom each took their turn at the microphone during Sunday's celebration. I love you all, Newsom said. I don't know exactly what to say. I'm kind of nervous. Ferris said, I would just like to thank everyone for pushing me so hard to get better. I really appreciate it now. Ferris said head coach Michael Mosley has had an impact on him both on and off the court. He's really been like a father to me, he said. I owe him a lot. Mosley said that each one of the players will hold a special bond in his heart. He also thanked the players' families and student cheering section. We have the greatest students in the state, he said. Sometimes I thought some of their chance might have pushed the envelope a little bit, but they really helped us with their support. The coach was most proud of how the squad worked together as a team and achieved the goal of making the state tournament. He said, we're going to try our best to get back to state again next year. Bauman said the team's work ethic should be inspiring to others. This team was built on defense, and you could see it in the fourth quarter of close games. This team would never quit and would get after it. It is that type of effort that made this team a success, and that will help these individuals, players, be a success as well. Sunday's celebration included current students as well as alumni and Bloomington residents. Tim McGinnity of Bloomington, a Bloomington High School graduate, said, this team was exciting to watch. I never had that much energy, but these guys brought it to every single night out. To watch your school play in the state tournament, that's a special trip feeling. You don't forget those things. Holly White of Bloomington said she felt the team deserved to win a state championship, but knows there will be other opportunities. She said, we're back. We have a great coach and great players. One of these days, we're going to win it all. And that concludes the story about the celebration of Bloomington High School's basketball team. Here's an article about an opportunity for students to work with professors. The registration is open to high schoolers for Illinois State University Research Academy. Registration is open for the Illinois Summer Research Academy at Illinois State University for high school students. At the academy, which takes place June 25 to 30, current high school freshmen, sophomores, and juniors will have opportunities to work with professors on various hands-on research projects. The academy is sponsored by ASU's Center for Mathematics, Science, and Technology. Students will learn about tools and techniques used in current research projects by ISU faculty members. They will contribute to the faculty projects and/or work on their own research project with peers. This year's research opportunities will be in the areas of molecular neuroscience, biochemistry, organic chemistry, and computing and information technology. The academy attracts students from across the country. The cost is $650, which includes on-campus housing, all meals, evening social activities, an overnight parking pass if needed, and a t-shirt. Commuter students who do not need the full meal plan and housing pay $330. Scholarships are available. The initial application deadline is April 1. Interested people can download an application at cemast.ilstu.edu. Amy Braun, CEMST Assistant Director of Outreach, can answer questions at 309-438-8115 or ambloom, A-M-B-L-O-O-M, at ilstu.edu. Application review and placement in research opportunities will begin April 1. Applications received after that date will be reviewed on a case-by-case basis as space is available, but no applications will be accepted after May 1. Faculty members who will be involved in the Academy include Andres Vidal-Gaeta, Professor of Molecular Neuroethology, Marjorie Jones, Professor of Biochemistry, Andrew Mitchell, Associate Professor of Organic Chemistry, and Glenn Sagers, Associate Professor of Information Systems. And that concludes the article about the opportunity for students to work with faculty on campus this summer. Well, in the crime news, we have a sexually violent suspect arrested. Bloomington. A man police described as a sexually violent person has been located and arrested in Michigan and will be brought back to Illinois, officials said Sunday. On Saturday, the Bloomington Police Department was informed that David Hermosillo was in Wakefield, Michigan. The U.S. Marshal Task Force, along with the Iron County Sheriff's Department and Gogebic County Sheriff's Department, arrested him, said Bloomington Detective Tom Reyna. Police say Hermosillo, age 50, was living on West MacArthur Avenue in Bloomington, but cut off his ankle tracking device. A warrant was issued for his arrest for escape. As part of Hermosillo's conditional release, he was required to register as a sexually violent person and wear a GPS monitor. But his whereabouts became unknown after the monitor was cut off, police said on March 9. He's wanted on a McLean County warrant, charging him with escape of a sexually violent person. Hermosillo is now awaiting extradition back to McLean County. That concludes that article. Over on the sports page, we find an article about the Bloomington Edge football team. Edge rally falls short before fight erupts. Bloomington. Darylyn Dunn and Mike McGee did as much as they could Saturday trying to rally the Bloomington Edge to a third straight victory. But despite Dunn scoring 5 touchdowns and McGee adding a late blocked kick return score to his 2 interceptions, the Edge wound up on the short side of a 55-50 setback to the Omaha Beef before a crowd of 1,127 at U.S. Cellular Coliseum. Dunn said, "It's a learning experience. There's not many championship teams that go undefeated, so we've got to take it a day at a time and go back to the drawing board." Following the game, the opposing sides got into an altercation on the field. Bloomington coach Amir Ishmael said the fight began when former Edge lineman Antonio Ficklin of Omaha hit him in the face as he tried to offer congratulations. He said, "He's a low-class person of that nature, a good football player, but very low-class when he doesn't have that sportsmanship," said Ishmael. He will get suspended, and that's going to hurt their team. Quarterback Anthony Ayonata had 3 touchdown runs, and running back Kelvin Phillips added 2 for the Beef, whose record is 2-1. Edge quarterback Caleb Holbrook threw 2 touchdown passes and was intercepted twice. Ishmael called the loss very sloppy, as the Edge, which has a record of 2-1, struggled to tackle on defense and had several first-half drives stalled by persistent miscues in the center exchange. "We had a few turnovers on offense, and that put us in a bad situation. But defensively, we couldn't stop the run, and we couldn't tackle very well," said the coach. "We weren't assignment sound, and we didn't do a good enough job to stop them." Down 41-16 late in the third quarter, the Edge rallied with two Dunn touchdowns to cut the deficit to 10 with more than 6 minutes to play. But after succeeding on an earlier onside kick, Bloomington tried again and failed. They later failed three more times. That allowed the Beavs to capitalize on short fields to keep the Edge at bay. Dunn's touchdown reception made it 55-40 with 30 seconds to play, and McGee dashed 45 yards after Kyle Jenkins blocked a late field goal, but Phillips ran out the final seconds on the final missed onside attempt. The Edge return to action next Saturday when they host the expansion Bismarck Bucks for a 7:05 p.m. kickoff. And here's a story about the hockey team. Stars top Lieberman and Thunder. The Bloomington Thunder had their six-game unbeaten streak snapped Sunday as the Lincoln Stars earned a series split with a 4-1 victory at the Icebox. Recent arrival Nick Leverman netted the first career goal for the lone Thunder rally. Goalie Logan Halliday stopped 29 shots in his eighth straight starts for Bloomington, who has a record of 22 wins, 24 losses, and 7 ties. Brandon Schultz had a goal and assist, while Joseph Kostner made 27 stops for the Stars, whose record is 28 wins, 20 losses, and 5 ties. Following a scoreless first period, Colin Peters scored shorthanded midway through the second for Lincoln, and Schultz converted an assist from Henry Bowlby 2 minutes later. Lieberman, a Notre Dame recruit making his first appearance this season, cut the deficit in half with an unassisted power play tally with less than 4 minutes left in the second. Cam Burke started the play, winning an offensive draw to Vlad Drashvili before Lieberman beat Korinor with a top-shelf drive from the left circle. Schultz set up Ethan Frank's goal that restored Lincoln's two-goal advantage with 3.5 minutes to go. Dominic Murch added an empty netter for the Stars. The Thunder head to Plymouth, Michigan next weekend to face the Team USA under-17 squad on Friday and the under-18 team on Saturday. Staying with sports, we see a report here from the Thief College baseball team. Redbird baseball swept by Lipscomb. Lipscomb University earned a three-game series sweep of the Illinois State baseball team by virtue of an 8-3 win over the Redbirds on Sunday at Ken Dugan Field in Nashville, Tennessee. The Redbirds, whose record is now 5-12, rebounded from an early 2-0 deficit by scoring twice in the second to tie the contest at 2-all. Ryan Hutchinson's sacrifice fly scored Nord Sadler before Joe Ellis plated Colin Braithwaite with a two-out single. Lipscomb, whose record is 11-8, then pulled away from Illinois State, scoring a single run in the third and two more in the fourth before adding three insurance runs in the seventh to make it an 8-2 game. Redbird starter Brady Huffman, whose record is 1-1, was tagged for 5 runs over the first 3 2/3 innings in the loss. Kyle Kemp, whose record is 2-1, pitched 4 perfect innings of relief to pick up the win. Illinois State travels to Champaign on Tuesday to face the University of Illinois with the first pitch scheduled for 4 p.m. And in golf, the Illinois Wesleyan men's golf team finished 8th. The Illinois Wesleyan men's golf team posted an 8th-place finish in the 29-team Jekyll Island Collegiate Invitational, which wrapped up on Sunday at the Pine Lakes Golf Club in Jekyll Island, Georgia. Illinois Wesleyan, which started the day in 5th place, had a final day 303 score and finished at 26 over par 890. Greensboro blistered a final total of 288 to move up from 5th and win the team championship at 875. Oglethorpe, Huntington College, and Methodist University tied for 2nd with totals of 879. The Titans drew Pershing, tied for 21st place at 222, while Jacob Arnett of Oglethorpe was medalist at 212. And finally, in women's golf, the Illinois Wesleyan women's golf team finished in 9th place after Sunday's final round of the 23-team Jekyll Island Women's Collegiate Invitational at Indian Mound Golf Club in Jekyll Island, Georgia. The Titans posted a final round score of 323 to finish at 970, while New York University took the team title at 934. Illinois Westerlin freshman Melanie Wolf tied for sixth place at 233, three shots behind the tri-medalists, who were Samantha Habenstock of Washington University, St. Louis, Sydney Weaver of Berry College, and Kelly Ransom at Claremont Mud Scripps. That concludes the story about the And here's a story from Champaign about the Illini upcoming game with Boise State in the National Invitational Tournament. Champaign. It's been 6 days since the University of Illinois played a basketball, six very unusual days. In that time, Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman conducted a one-man whirlwind search and hired Oklahoma State's Brad Underwood as the new head coach. That gives current players and committed recruits a name they can ponder. Although news of his hiring broke Saturday, Underwood will be formally introduced at noon Monday at the State Farm Center in Champaign. Underwood met with the Illini team before practice Sunday and told them they should make the best out of the opportunity to keep winning in the NIT. Second-seeded Illinois, with a record of 19-14, entertains sixth-seeded Boise State with a record of 20-11 in a second-round NIT game at 8 p.m. Monday. Underwood will be introduced to the State Farm Center crowd at halftime. Boise State upset third-seeded Utah 73-68 in the opening round NIT game, also played last Tuesday. To be clear, Underwood has been hired as Illinois' new head coach, but Jamal Walker, named by Whitman to be interim coach after the firing of John Gross, will coach the Illinois team throughout NIT play. Walker has been analyzing Boise State's victory over Utah, and based on that game, Illinois' number one goal is clear: stop Chandler Hutchinson. Hutchinson is a 6'7 junior who scored 34 points against Utah. He's Boise State's leading scorer and rebounder, and Walker said the heartbeat of the team. Hutchinson is terrific, said Walker. He's really good. Nick Duncan, a 6'8 forward, I remember watching him in the NCAA tournament 2 years ago. He can really, really shoot the ball. They have great spacing on offense. I love how they play four side, one inside. They are setting ball screens and they play fast. It's a fun way they play. Illinois will be without sophomore Michael Finke, who was wearing a boot on his left foot Sunday. They decided to shut me down for the season, said Finke, who also missed Illinois' NIT opener against Valparaiso. It's not a stress fracture, but they said if I keep playing, it could become one. Prior to Illinois' 82-57 victory over Valpo, Walker said he asked the team to find motivation to play hard in the tournament despite missing out on the NCAA tournament and despite whatever pressures the team may have felt while trying to save Gross's job. Walker's taking the same approach this time, appealing to his seniors to lead the way. Walker said they're excited about the opportunity to play, and that's what I keep focusing on. It's on them. It's on the players. It's on the seniors, Mav Morgan, on Tracy Abrams, on Malcolm Hill, and all of them to be prepared and bring the other guys along with them. I can't do it myself. I'm not playing. My playing career ended in 1999, so we're going to do the best we can to get them prepared strategically and hope they can bring their mindset and toughness to the game. Well, here's today's flick fact. And the question of the day is, the statue of John Wesley Powell in the atrium of Ames Library on the campus of Illinois Wesleyan University is unique in what way? Is missing an arm? The statue sits with students in the middle of the library. Although situated in the heart of Illinois, it includes a map of Utah. Okay, which one did you choose? It's all three. The statue of a sitting Powell is true to his stature. He lost his right arm in the Civil War's Battle of Shiloh in 1862. One of the first explorers of the Grand Canyon, Great American West, and also what became years later Utah, a statue of Powell sits in the Illinois Wesleyan University Library because after leaving the Army, he became a professor of geology at Illinois Wesleyan and also lectured at nearby Illinois State Normal University. Here are some articles from the Daily Digest, Bloomington. The 7th Annual Taking Steps to End Child Abuse 5K Color Run and 1 Mile Walk will begin at 9 a.m. April 29 at Fairview Park, 801 North Main Street, Normal. The event, in support of Children's Home and AIDS Family Visitation Center, is in memory of Duncan and Jack Lichtenberg. Check-in and registration is at 9 a.m., followed by a 10 a.m. balloon race, 10:15 a.m. walk, and 10:30 a.m. run. Registration is $35. For more information, call 309-834-5294 or email lcordero, at childrenshomeaid.org. And here's how time flies. March 20, 1917, 100 years ago today. Colfax has a government wireless radio station that can receive messages from 2,000 miles away and send messages up to 60 miles. Earl Russell owns and operates the station. Since the government is involved, much of the station's operations will be kept secret. 75 years ago today, on March 20, 1942, the Normal School Board will close Smith School, at least for next year. Smith's dwindling population of students will be shifted to Central School. With enrollment declining, Smith School has become too expensive to keep open without cutting teacher pay. 50 years ago today, March 20, 1967, University of Illinois football coach Pete Elliott and basketball coach Harry Combs resigned under fire after discovery of an illicit $23,000 slush fund. Elliott, a Bloomington High School grad, coached Illinois to a Rose Bowl victory in 1964. The fund was used to help athletes with their expenses. 25 years ago today, on March 20, 1992, WBNQ, the FM sister radio station of WJBC, is celebrating 25 years on the air. WBNQ is the old WJBC FM, which began in 1947. The change came in August 1967 when WJBC FM signed off and then signed on as WBNQ the next morning. Let's take a look at a couple of the comics. Here's Pickles, the two elderly couple who live together and have interesting times together. In a recent strip, the cat had learned to ring the doorbell, and that caused a great deal of consternation in the household. In today's strip, we see Mr. Pickles and Mrs. Pickles sitting in the two chairs with a phone nearby. And Mr. Pickles says, "How the heck did the cat learn to ring the doorbell anyway?" And she says in the next panel, "I don't know. She's just very observant, and she learns quickly." And then in the third panel, he says, "Well, it's insane. Cats aren't supposed to be ringing doorbells. What's she going to be doing next? Calling us on the phone?" And in the fourth panel, we see the telephone ring, ring, ring. And he says, "If that's the cat, we're getting an unlisted number." Here's a strip about Beetle Bailey, the young private in the Army who's always having all kinds of trouble. And here's two panels. The first panel is the sergeant and the corporal are standing outside of the barracks building, and there's a solar panel on the roof of the barracks building. And the corporal says, "Beetle installed a solar panel on the roof." And in the next panel, we see Beetle in his most common posture, sleeping in bed, giving big Z's, and the corporal and sergeant were inside, and the corporal said he's using the solar panel to power his new electric blanket, which is shown covering Beetle and keeping him very warm. And finally, we had Blondie, and this time it's Dagwood and his boss, Mr. Dithers. And the boss comes into the room where Dagwood's working, and he says, "Bumstead, I'm tired of picking up candy wrappers off the floor." And in the next panel, he says, "Send out an email. The next employee I see tossing a candy wrapper is history." And Dagwood says, "Yes, sir, will do, boss." The final panel is the boss walking out of the room and says over his shoulder, "And put a funny spin on it so they don't think I'm a grumpy old geezer." Well, Mr. Dithers is a grumpy old geezer. That concludes my reading of the first part of the Bloomington Pantograph today on Monday, March 20. I look forward to reading for you again at some time and some other time soon. Goodbye for now.